Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Shirley Min.
And I'm Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne.
You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer. This monthly program is a chance for Delawareans to hear directly from their governor and ask questions in real time. Delaware Governor Matt Meyer, thank you so much for joining us in studio.
Hi, Shirley. Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
We are going to get through a lot over the next hour, and we would love to include your questions and comments in the mix. So give us a call at 888-477-9499. You can email askgovmeyer@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you can just drop your comment into the chat.
Governor, we're going to start things off. We want to start with a story that's captured the attention of many in the last few days. The ACLU recently sued Fenwick Island for allowing corporations to vote, and a judge dismissed the case, saying it did not violate the state constitution. The ACLU says this flies in the face of one person, one vote. But with Delaware's economy so deeply tied to corporate law and business incorporation, do cases like this reinforce perceptions that corporations have an outsized influence in the state?
Thank you, Shirley. I appreciate the question, and it's great to be here this evening. We live in a strange world today, don't we? Just in the past couple of days, our president announced he was setting up a $1.8 billion settlement fund to aid, quote unquote, those perpetrators, the January 6th riot, people who literally tried to overthrow our government, injured law enforcement officials. In Trump's America, storming the Capitol comes with a better benefits package than raising a family. What I hear in Delaware every day is not just issues with corporations voting. We'll get to that in a second. But also gas prices are too high. Electric prices are too high. People's power bills from Delmarva especially are way too high. People are having challenges affording rent and finding affordable housing, finding a house to buy. And too many Delaware families just can't afford health insurance, can't afford to get a primary care physician. This morning, I ordered my Secretary of Finance to work with the legislature so that any money out of Trump's slush fund, the $1.8 billion slush fund, that goes to a Delawarean who's a January 6th perpetrator, be taxed in Delaware at 100%.
So that's similar. Not on what California said.
It started with a state rep in New York, is my understanding, proposed it. Governor Newsom recently said he's going to do it. We're on board as no one in our state will profit, not a single penny, from storming the Capitol and causing harm to law enforcement officials. In terms of corporations and the outsized influence of corporations, I could not agree more. I agree with the ACLU. I hope they appeal that case. It's one person, one vote. No matter what the corporate franchise is in Delaware, there's no role that corporations have in voting.
Well, prior to the suit, do you think many Delawareans realize that this practice even existed?
Well, there's been some action in the Delaware State Legislature over the years. So those, you know, most attuned to WHYY probably have read about it before and learned about it. It's wrong. It's un-American. What we need to do, people like myself really need to be doing every day, is focusing our government and our resources on people, not on corporations. We have an electric utility, Delmarva, the largest electric utility. Their parent company, Exelon, recently announced profits of $7.2 billion in a year, $300 million more than was forecasted. They're making it off the backs of Delawareans who can, and others, but Delawareans who cannot afford their power bills. So we need to stand up for people, not for corporations. I appreciate the ACLU took the lead in this case, and we'll do everything we can to make sure, even in, you know, local municipal elections.
I was going to say, because there's multiple municipalities in the state that do this.
Mostly
Seifert,
in the southern part of
Seifert
the state.
Tried
right.
to do it a few years ago. Right. Is there a situation where you feel like there should be some action in the legislature to prevent? Is there a path?
There was an attempt in the state legislature to do it a few years ago. I was then nose deep in county issues, so I can't remember exactly what the resolution is. But I'm certainly open to addressing it at the state level.
Okay,
and to be absolutely clear for anyone listening, right now in federal and state elections, it's one person, one vote. No corporation can vote. And my intention is not only to make sure that there is no corporations voting, but do everything we can to get corporate money out of politics.
Okay, so while we're on the subject of voting, let's do a quick, rapid roundup of listener questions on the subject. Thomas from Dover wants our state to start being a major part of the presidential election process. And he thinks a good way of doing that would be to hold Delaware's presidential primary election on Super Tuesday instead of in April. Would you be in favor of that?
I am. I don't know about Super Tuesday, but I'm in favor. I agree with Thomas from Dover. That's easy to remember. I'm in favor of moving the date up.
Is that possible?
It is.
Okay.
We're working on it.
Okay. James from Milton wants to know why Delaware doesn't have ranked choice voting in elections. He says it seems like a good idea to him.
Yeah, ranked choice. I find ranked choice interesting. I'm not opposed to it. I'm a little bit worried that one main purpose of ranked choice, for those people that don't know, ranked choice, rather than going to the voting booth and saying you want this one candidate, you provide a ranking of candidates. It's particularly helpful when there are more than two candidates running. You might be in a case where you really like a candidate, you say that candidate doesn't have a chance of winning, therefore I'm not going to vote for the candidate I really like in today's world, or today's world in Delaware. Instead, you're going to vote for a different candidate. Ranked choice enables you to just rank the candidates. A few problems with it. One is New York City is probably the largest jurisdiction that's put it into action. Number one, it takes entirely too long to calculate who won. Mm-hmm. It often can take weeks. And there are challenges in Americans understanding the democratic process. This adds a layer of complexity. A second thing that we've seen in New York is candidates start making alliances and playing strategic games, when what I really want candidates to do and what I expect Delawareans to ask me to do is put forth a policy proposal. Tell us what you're going to do. And if you like what I'm going to do, you vote for it. If you don't like it, you choose somebody else's.
Okay, personal question here from me. When voting in primaries, poll workers yell out the voters' party affiliation. Is that because Delaware has a closed primary? What is that about?
That's a good, I believe I can get the answer, Shirley. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It startled me. I was voting and I'm
Shirley
like,
Lynn, independent. Yeah. Whatever. Shirley Lynn, libertarian. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, why don't you tell everyone? I thought it was private.
Like, my neighbor now knows. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I believe it's to very publicly and openly make sure all the election workers know that you get a Democratic ballot or a Republican ballot or a Libertarian ballot, and not the, you know, that there's no sort of secret dealing.
A little jarring first thing in the morning.
Yeah. All right, so we'll move.
It does make, I'd argue, makes elections a little more entertaining than maybe in most places when you go into the polling booth.
Well, let's move on to the state budget, Governor. The latest state revenue projections from the Delaware Economic and Financial Advisory Council are in. Looks like there's nearly $200 million extra available for next year's state budget. As the Budget Writing Joint Finance Committee meets to mark up the budget over the next week or so, are you feeling comfortable the state is on track to deliver a budget that you feel works?
I am, Tom. Let me frame this a little bit. I came into office last year in January, 16 months ago, and a lot of the news around the budget was that the sky is falling. You had the end of COVID money. You had an economy that was changing, and you had Trump, who pretty clearly at that time, and it's played out, was going to reduce support for state government and state government budgets. This is kind of a triple whammy. On top of that, you had what people thought were historic threats to our corporate franchise, which is over $2 billion of our $7 billion state revenue. Given that, I mean, we're in really good shape. As you mentioned, the May DFAC just last week showed revenues outpacing expectations by hundreds of millions of dollars. We've managed in my recommended budget to hold expenses under 5% for the first time in any governor's recommended budget in years. And we're in a healthy place. What we're doing now is we're trying to focus in a laser way on those pressures that Delaware families feel. Housing prices, childcare, energy prices. How can we assist Delaware families? How can we make investments, not just to like give a one-time cash infusion to something, but to impact the system and align incentives? So for example, make sure we're both providing direct rental and mortgage assistance to first-time homebuyers and people on the cusp of being able to get in a house. Make sure we give them that little bit so they can afford shelter for their family, but also making changes to law and making investments so that we can have the biggest boom in affordable, reasonable, well thought out, smart growth, affordable housing in a generation.
I do want to say Shelley from Claymont, for example, wrote in to express some doubts about the direction budget-wise of the state, saying, what specific solutions are you proposing to stop what she called the reckless overspending that's happening in our state? What do you say to people like that who feel like the state is still spending too much, even as you try to bring spending down?
I think almost all the math, I look at the math, right? It's easy to throw around the, oh, we're spending too much. We don't have enough revenue. We have too much revenue. We need to cut this or increase that. I just look first and foremost at the math. And the math tells a story that is starting in about 2021, 2022, the state budgets were growing at very high rates, not because we were taxing people more, not because revenues within the state were way up, though there was some of that. It was primarily because there was, I don't know, $2 billion of COVID money coming in from the federal government. So people will say in the past 4 or 5 years, our budget has grown by some outrageous percentage. A lot of that is COVID money. As that's gone away, I think there was a lot of fear that what are we going to do? And that was sort of what I was working on my first couple of weeks. Right now, when you look at the actual math, it looks pretty good. And I'd encourage, you know, I think it was Shelley from Claymont to go. I believe you can log into a DFAC meeting. You might be able to still hear. Listen to the actual math. The sort of, I know it's kind of dry, but the hard and fast details of our revenues and expenditures. And it's not as bad a picture as you might see in social media.
We talked about corporations earlier, so I want to touch again on the corporate franchise revenue that we discussed last month. According to your Secretary of State, the revenue generated by corporations that incorporate here in Delaware grew by 1% between 2025 and 2026. The Joint Finance Committee co-chair shrugged it off as a, quote, low number. Is there a particular growth rate you would like to see in corporate franchise revenue that would indicate to you that the corporate franchise is healthy?
Well, first of all, our corporate franchise is doing better numerically than it's ever done before. We ended 2025 with 2.28 million entities, 2.2 million companies registered in Delaware, more than there have ever been, more than two times the number of corporate entities as our population. I'm pretty sure there's no other state in the country that can say that. It's also 130,000 more than 2024. That 1% increase you're talking about is just corporations. You have to look at all the entities.
The LLCs.
Because, if people are choosing an LLC over a corporation or LLP, a partnership,
right. That
you know, we don't really, that's not good or bad for us. We just
it's
want
just
people
revenue.
To, right. And so our revenues are very healthy. If you look, if you take time and look at just the press reporting over the past 2 years, you know, the demise of our corporate franchise was supposed to be dead by now, according to what you read 2 years ago, certainly when I was coming to office. And in fact, the numbers are thriving. So it's healthy. The threats aren't over. We have our head down. We're working tirelessly to make sure we preserve our corporate franchise.
Do you have
franchise.
A benchmark, though, of a number you'd like to see in terms of growth?
We like to see it increasing with the market. Or better than the market. So what actually happens traditionally with a corporate franchise is as the global market and the national market, it expands and contracts. And as the market contracts, not because of anything the governor of Delaware or even Delawareans are doing, but because of the global marketplace, when there's a contraction or a recession like in 2008, 2009, when things get tough, less people set up companies.
So you see it as a moving target.
So yeah, it's hard to say, oh, we want a 4% increase. I mean, the new business entities increased 15.4% from 2024 to 2025. That's a much faster growth than economic growth. That's good news for the state. But listen, there. I don't want to say, you know, with the way our national government's being led now, I think some people with inflationary concerns and other concerns are saying, with what the stock market's doing, say there might be a contraction or recession. And when that happens, that might mean next year the actual number of corporate entities decreases a little bit. That's not necessarily a terrible thing for Delaware. It's just tracking with the national economy.
Before we go to break, I want to bring in a caller. Ruth Ann from Cheswold is live on Ask Governor Meyer. Ruth Ann, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Thank you for having this interesting conversation.
What's your question?
I live in Cheswold, and we have not very high salaries and a pretty low work where you live statistic. And I just keep wondering, how does Governor Meyer balance the need to cater to businesses, big businesses, and still take care of the working poor?
Yeah. Ruth Ann, thank you for that question.
That's a great question, Ruth Ann. The first thing I'll say is we do a lot of we make a lot of effort talking about affordability of healthcare, of gas, of energy, of childcare. But I like to say, as a math teacher, affordability is only one side of the equation. It's not just what you spend; it's what you make. And there's a challenge right now in the global economy and in our nation that salaries, wages are not rising the way they should be. And so we're doing everything we can to make sure that people get paid for a fair day's work. Well, we've made historic steps in attracting companies to Delaware and in having companies in Delaware expand. Several $1 billion of investment based on reporting just in my first 15 months. Also, Ruth Ann, I should say that we also are keyed in on small businesses. About half of Delawareans employed in private companies are employed in small businesses. We're very aware that they often don't have access to the high-priced lawyers and engineers and accountants to help them grow. I signed an executive order 2 weeks ago in Milford, not too far from Cheswold, in the northern part of Milford, so still in Kent County, that provides small businesses in our state a single point of contact. Mm-hmm. So when there are issues with the government, the small business can contact a single person.
Okay, we're going to stop it there for just a moment, but we will be right back. After the break, we are talking to Delaware Governor Matt Meyer about government transparency and why some lawmakers made the news for accepting free trips to Taiwan and South Africa.
And of course, you still have a chance to make your voice heard. If you have questions or comments for the governor, let us know. Call 888-477-9499. Email askgovmeyer@whyy.org.
You are listening to Ask Governor Meyer and WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Min.
And I'm Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne. And with us live in our Philadelphia studio is Delaware Governor Matt Meyer.
And he's taking questions from us and from you this hour. So if you have a question or a comment, email askgovmeyer@whyy.org or call in at 888-477-9499. So I want to start off, Governor, talking about former Wilmington Mayor Mike Perzicki, who passed away this month. You were at his funeral today. And many remember him as a visionary who helped reshape Wilmington's riverfront and restored confidence in the city. What do you think his lasting legacy will be?
Well, first of all, Mike was a friend. When I was county executive, I got to know him. We didn't agree on everything. We argued a lot. He was tough. I like Mike because there wasn't much filter on him. You know, in this business, too many people have too many filters. There wasn't many filters. And again, I didn't agree on everything. He was actually a big collaborator on something called the Hope Center, which is the largest, most comprehensive homeless shelter in Delaware history. He doesn't get enough credit for it. He stuck his neck out. It's not in the city of Wilmington. The city of Wilmington contributed significantly financially to the Hope Center. He did things like HBCU Week, which provided a path to college students, millions and millions of dollars for kids to go to college who may not otherwise have the opportunity. I appreciate the question. Listen, I think Mike gets a lot of credit for the riverfront. He worked there a long time. He deserves that credit. He also gets credit for things he did in neighborhoods. And really, Mike Perzicki could have made a lot of money in the private sector. Instead, mm-hmm. he decided to look out for people and see what he could do to move our city forward. And he did that.
Governor, we want to spend some time now on government accountability. So for our accountability corner segment, we want to talk about the Clean Slate Act. Delaware woefully behind schedule on expunging criminal records for those who have qualifying circumstances so they can get better job, housing, and other opportunities. We talked about this last month.
Yeah, and I was pissed off, and I'm still pissed off.
And you also told us that you would have news on this by the end of May. Here's the news, right?
Yeah, and I was pissed off then, and I'm still pissed off now because we're not moving fast enough. To recap, in, I believe, 2021, before I was governor, there was legislation passed that I agree with, that I support, to provide automatic expungements. Mm-hmm. It's been done in a number of other states. In 2024, that legislation went into effect. What it was supposed to do is automatically expunge certain offenses. It's very important to our economy that people have low-level offenses. It's not branded on them like a scarlet letter for decades and decades. People should be able to re-enter the workforce without being scarred or being seen differently. It's very, very important to our economic future and to our public safety. I committed that we're going to do things differently. And last year, out of over 1 million offenses that are eligible for expungement, 17,000 were expunged. the problem is more than 17,000 offenses were added to the list. So if we continue at the same pace,
you're going the wrong way.
We'd never catch up. So we looked at the technology. We looked at the processes. Within the next week, 64,000 single in a single day, 64,000 are going to be automatically expunged, which is about, I think, 5 to 6% of the total backlog. But we're going to use that same process to expedite it. So the news is we're making progress. That's in a single batch, doing 4 times what was done in all of last year. And I like that you asked me the question, Tom. I like that you hold me accountable. Let's talk about it again. I'm saying 64,000. Now we can come back in a month and see where we are.
Okay. Staying on the topic of
Let me add one more thing on that. Sorry. Because 2 days ago, to my surprise, at a meeting, the leader of one of our state's largest private employers, a big bank that everyone's heard of, pulled me aside and he said, "Where are you on that automatic expungement thing?" I said, "Oh, you know, we're getting there." He's like, "Because we want to help, because we need the work. We need the people." Right now in Delaware, there's still more available jobs than there are people looking for jobs. So it's not just a question of being fair to people who've committed offenses in the past and want to put that in their past. And it is a question of fairness, but it's also a question of workforce needs.
Okay, so we're going to stay on the topic of accountability. We're going to turn now to our Reporter's Notebook segment. And this month, our dispatch comes from Chris Barish, an investigative reporter at WHYY.
"Hello, Governor. We recently reported that some state lawmakers and other officials have been taking free trips abroad, but not disclosing them as gifts. We initially were alerted that one of the 5 lawmakers who took a $6,800 trip to Israel last year didn't report it on his required financial form. As you know, they're supposed to report every gift worth more than $250. That legislator did disclose his free trip after I interviewed him, but then he alerted me that 5 lawmakers go to Taiwan for free every year and don't disclose that. Nor did Attorney General Kathy Jennings report a trade group's free trip to South Africa that included a safari. Here's what John Flaherty of the Delaware Coalition for Open Government says.
Whether it's the National Council of State Legislators, whether it's the government of Taiwan, it really doesn't matter who's paying it. The issue is they're paying to influence legislators, and legislators are getting a freebie. They need to report everything they're getting."
Lawmakers responded to our story by drafting a House bill that requires about 300 Delaware officials, including you, to specifically report all travel worth $500 or more that's paid for by an outside group. Is this bill even needed, and why or why not? And do you support reporting all freebies?"
Okay, so that was Chris Barish, reporter at WHYY. Governor, can you respond? Is this bill needed? Why or why not?
Let me answer the last question first. Do I believe that all freebies should be reported? I do. I believe in transparency. One of the first things I did when I was elected to public office in the county is I put our entire checkbook online. I thought that if we're spending a penny of your taxpayer money, right, or anyone spending money to influence us, you have a right to know as the voter. In terms of the specific bill, I don't like commenting on bills until I've read them. There are hundreds of bills pending. I have not read this particular bill, but it sounds like Chris Barish, the reporter, is saying that at least in some cases, it looks like the law was not followed. The law is sometimes the law is good. The executional law is not good.
Well, I was going to say, is part of the issue some kind of accountability, some kind of teeth to these laws,
right,
that make sure that people do things. If there's no teeth to it.
That's why one of the first bills I signed last year was Inspector General. We worked expeditiously. We swore in Robert Storch as Inspector General. I don't know if there's a human being on earth more qualified to be the Inspector General of Delaware than Robert Storch. And we're hoping I hope as a Delawarean, he rolls up his sleeves, gets to work.
Do you think there should be more teeth in other areas? You know, things like election laws. We've seen a lot of situations where it just seemed like there wasn't any kind of teeth to enforcement.
I do.
Okay.
I want to bring a caller in right now. We have Caitlin from Smyrna on the line. Caitlin, thank you so much for calling. And what is your question for the governor?
Thank you so much for having me. My question is, I'm sure you heard about the student that was lost in our community from an e-bike accident. We're seeing an uptick of e-bikes with minors. My question is, are we going to look to fight some legislation on that to kind of alleviate the uptick that we're seeing. Because one student loss is too many at
this
point. And there's also an accident that happened last week with another e-bike within the community. So that's where my question is.
Absolutely.
I would love to see some accountability there and some kind of safety things put into place to kind of help alleviate that.
Thank you for the question. I appreciate it. Absolutely. We need to look at, things like helmets, requiring helmets. We also have to look at education and putting those that sell e-bikes on the hook a little bit for making sure they educate the public, that they're fully disclosing the danger of e-bikes. I know other communities around the country have struggled with these same issues, and we've made it very clear we're very open to pushing through legislation that will keep our kids safe. I really appreciate, as a parent of three kids, one of whom rides an e-bike a little bit more than I'd like, I really appreciate the question.
I have a 13-year-old who is hounding me about an e-bike as well.
It's hard to keep
him
away.
So I'm with Caitlin on this
one. And even when you don't get him an e-bike, in my experience, you see them riding the friend's e-bike.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, we're now going to turn to an issue close to home for many listeners, utility bills. Governor, your picks for the Delaware Public Service Commission were recently confirmed. This is the group that oversees utilities for the first state. And you've talked about protecting families from outrageous spikes in energy bills. What specifically do you want these new appointees to do differently?
So first of all, Exelon, the parent company of Delmarva, as I mentioned earlier, reported $7.24 billion in revenue this year. That's $7.24 billion. That's larger than the revenue in our state budget. That's larger than our state budget. They beat their forecast by $300 million. So they're telling forecasters we expect under $7 billion, and they're making $7.24 billion. These utility companies don't really care about you. Their primary responsibility is to shareholders, to increase returns for out-of-state shareholders, a family trying to afford their electricity, a single mom trying to afford to keep the lights on, literally, be damned. The one control on that we have is the Public Service Commission. Mm-hmm. I, 2 weeks ago, overhauled the Public Service Commission. 80% of the members are new members who have pledged to me directly that they are going to prioritize affordability. We're going to go a step further. We believe that the regulatory regime, the system that we've built to regulate power companies in our state, it was made decades ago. It wasn't made for today's world where there are these spikes in demand, where there are these data center proposals that are horrendous for communities, where there are affordability crises, where suddenly a utility company can start charging families $600, $800 a month. So we are looking, number one, to stop. Delmarva currently has a proposal to increase rates that is going into effect shortly on an interim basis. We're looking to stop that. We're looking for a fair evaluation of their increase in rates. And we're looking at the entire system to make sure, how do we build a system that's actually fair, that's centered on Delaware families and not centered on getting profits for Delmarva shareholders?
But when should ratepayers expect to feel any kind of relief?
Well, the first, Delmarva's coming with almost endless increases, right? So the first thing we're trying to, and under the law, they're entitled to automatically have an increase. So right now we're working to stop that increase immediately, right? To get Delmarva will tell you, oh, we prioritize affordability. They recently proposed an affordability agenda. Or a relief agenda that's going to cost them an extra $30 million. And they say they're going to pass that extra cost on to ratepayers. So it's like an affordability proposal that actually costs more money. It's silliness. It's marketing. So we're holding their feet to the fire. We're working hard to increase generation capacity because Delmarva is delivering the power, but there are other companies that are generating the power and doing everything we can to increase that generation to our state. So it's not just the cost of the delivery that will go down or at least be stabilized, but the cost of the generation as well.
Governor, you just mentioned the data center part of this equation. And last week, lawmakers introduced a bill that combines several previous efforts to regulate large energy users like data centers. The new bill would give greater oversight to the Delaware Public Service Commission and require, among other things, data centers to absorb any cost of energy disruption rather than those costs being passed along to regular ratepayers. Do you support trying to do this as one comprehensive bill? And is, I guess one of the issues that comes up is this idea of balancing protections for residents, but also not completely closing the door on the opportunity of having data centers and other large load users come in and provide, you know, an economic benefit to the state's economy. Do you feel like that's what this bill can do?
And listen, Tom, corporations and companies can do a lot of good in communities. They provide employment. They can at times go into sites that are environmentally awful and remediate them. Right now, across Delaware and across America, I think too many people are feeling screwed by billion-dollar, sometimes trillion-dollar companies that are taking advantage of them. So I think if you have a company that's going to come in and do anything, a data center or anything, that's going to generate the power, that's going to treat neighbors responsibly, that's going to treat the environment responsibly so we sustain it for the next generation, I'm always open to sit down and say, how do we work together? We need that for our future, not a data center, but we need companies to work with us to move forward. But if there are companies that are just trying to, you know, minimize government involvement. I was just at Select USA, which is attracting foreign companies to Delaware and to the U.S. And a company leader said to me, I don't like environmental regulation. Like, I don't want environmental regulation. Like, if you're just coming to make a buck, go somewhere else. If you're just coming to, like, you know, take our water and inflate power prices, go somewhere else. Please, not within the PJM region. But we're just saying that, and I appreciate the leadership in the state legislature, particularly Senator Hansen, saying you can come here, but if you come here, you got to be responsible partners, and you shouldn't be allowed to vote either. Your employees can, but not the corporation.
So moving on to healthcare, the compromise version of a bill that seeks to lower healthcare costs recently passed the state Senate. Mandated investments in primary care are slated to start immediately if this bill passes, but price caps on hospital costs would not go into effect for several years. What do you say to those who are dissatisfied with where this compromise landed, specifically the timeline of it on the cost controls?
Yeah, listen, I mean, I share your concern. Nothing ever goes far enough. It's a democratic process. Often you sit down with a certain point of view and you negotiate to get something through. Senate Bill 1, which you're referring to, Senator Townsend did yeoman's work in the trenches moving this forward. He was really, I think, I don't want to take words out of his mouth, but he was trying to do two things that I appreciate. One is increase the availability of primary care physicians by getting them more research. A larger percentage of the healthcare pie is going to go to primary care providers. That's the first thing. And the second thing is to cap costs. And so you're saying there's criticism about that cost capping takes too long to go into effect. I share that concern. There's an immediate concern to bring down hospital costs. Every hospital's balance sheet is a little bit different. So everyone has a different situation. One thing good about that bill is it incentivizes hospitals to do something called a global budget or a value-based budget, where right now, if you go to a hospital almost anywhere in the country, you're charged based on the services you get. Some say that, you know, healthcare analysts say hospitals are paid the more you're sick, right? Because if you go one day and the next day and the next day, hospitals are going to make more money. There are budgeting mechanisms where hospitals actually get paid for keeping you out of the hospital. So if they keep you healthy, there are incentives in that bill that kick in much, much quicker to say, hey, if you're willing to come to the table and do one of these things, and we're actually pretty far along with Nemours Children's Hospital to do that. If you're willing to do that, if other hospitals are going to do that, then that will benefit Delawareans and it'll bring down costs.
I do want to raise one other concern that some have about this bill, the compromises. Giving hospitals a seat at the table in the regulatory process, the bill would create to determine adjustments to, you know, federally managed Medicare rates that are used to set these caps. Are you concerned about that? That,
like, the fox guarding the hen house?
Basically.
Yeah, sure. I think there's concern. You need to make sure that you want them to have a voice, a seat at the table, make sure they don't have a dominant seat at the table, make sure that they're people representing the public interest. Too often with these boards and commissions that we have, and we have over 300 of them in the state, you look around the table and too many of the people just represent some narrow interest. Former Governor Markell said, anytime you're at a table, just look around the table and just ask who's representing the people's interest. Who's representing, you know, a mother out there with a couple kids who simply wants affordable health care? And we're going to make sure that the boards like this are dominated by people like that.
Okay, we're going to pause there for now. In just a moment, we'll be back with Delaware Governor Matt Meyer, including his reaction to community concerns we heard on a reporting trip we took to Rehoboth. This is Ask Governor Meyer. Thank you. You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Min.
And I'm Tom Byrne. Joining us this hour live is Delaware Governor Matt Meyer. And it's not too late to join the conversation.
Email askgovmeyer at whyy.org or call us at 888-477-9499. And if you are watching our live stream on YouTube or Facebook, leave your comments in the chat. Okay, Governor Meyer, we're going to start with our community focus segment, and this time it's brought to you by reporter Israel Hale.
Hey, Governor Meyer, I'm Israel Hale, the Southern Delaware reporter for Delaware Public Media. For this month's community focus, I spent a part of a rainy Memorial Day weekend in Rehoboth Beach. I wanted to ask Delawareans what issues they face day to day. First, I talked to Mark, a veteran who was handing out poppy flowers in memory of the troops. He brought up something that he felt was obvious.
The overdevelopment of Sussex County and lack of infrastructure. They're building more homes than the roads can handle. That's the problem with the overdevelopment.
Next, I talked to Alex, who was a Russian immigrant. He was taking a smoke break from his job selling T-shirts. He said he was frustrated by the quality of food available to him.
Every time I go to the grocery store, I need to look at the ingredients because most of the products contain straight garbage in it. Chemicals and all this stuff that ruin your health.
And last, I heard from Joanne, who was walking back to her car after spending the afternoon on the boardwalk. With energy prices in Delaware surging, she wonders what Delaware can do to make residents less reliant on the grid.
Balcony solar. I was just wondering where Delaware is on that. You know, so that you don't have to go through a utility company.
From Rehoboth Beach, I'm Israel Hale with this month's Ask Governor Meyer Community Focus.
Okay, Governor, so I want to take these one by one kind of quickly, starting with concerns around overdevelopment. So what do you say to folks like Mark?
First of all, Mark, thank you for your service to country, and thank you for handing out things on Memorial Day to honor the troops. Listen, Delaware beaches are idyllic. I think they're the best beaches in the world to go to. The problem is it was a secret when I was a kid, and the secret's kind of out. Mm-hmm. And everybody wants to be there. The cost of living is very low. We're one of the few, we're the only state in the mid-Atlantic and one of the only states in the region that's actually adding population because people want to be there. It's a good thing. People like it. It's flattering. But it creates all these problems, right? It creates problems of development, of growth, of healthcare, of traffic. We are working hard through our Office of State Planning to work with local governments. It's very hard because local governments control a lot of the zoning and land use planning. They control the ability to preserve land. We're making sure in each budget to add significant resources so that resources are available to preserve land, to make sure there's preservation, and make sure that insofar as we can change housing, we have a bill pending right now that's working to work with local jurisdictions and at times overrule them to make sure that there are more dense housing types. So we plan as a community and say, okay, this is where we want our open space to be. This is where we want our farms to be. This is where we want our retail and corporate sector to work. And this is where we want our homes to be. And that way we can preserve and plan communities for the future. I agree with Mark that generally in many parts of Sussex County has been unplanned. It's been the Wild West, and it's not good for communities.
Does DelDOT need to play a bigger role in the road piece of it that Mark mentioned?
Absolutely. DelDOT and Office of State Planning, we are putting them together. We created an Office of Economic Development to look at that because DelDOT, you know, they're a traffic agency. They're not really a growth agency. Mm-hmm. But to look at, wait, this has a huge impact on the development of communities. Sometimes growth is really good. Other times it's really bad and it's not what people want. So making sure we're working with local communities, not just local governments, but communities to repel the development. We have to make sure that the deepest pockets in our community don't determine the future destiny of these communities.
All right. What do you say to Alex about the food quality in the grocery aisle? Are there steps the state can take to address this issue?
We, a year ago, launched a Food is Medicine program, or relaunched it through an executive order. There's someone in my office, Nico Brady, that works on it every single day, making sure that there are no food deserts in the state, that it's not just food getting out to every community through great organizations like the food bank, but it's the healthiest food. She's creating partnerships between farmers and pharmacies. So you can actually go to pharmacies in a number of places in the state and get, you know, healthy homegrown vegetables and fruits and other
things to eat.
What about food quality, like, say, like eliminating Red 40 or something, you know?
Well, we did pass a law last year eliminating some of the red dyes. We're continuing looking at that. Listen, to be honest, it's increasingly challenging. The federal support for SNAP benefits, for food benefits, is decreasing. I feel like every few weeks we get a letter from the federal government trying to crack down in one way or another, trying to cut our SNAP rolls and reduce food assistance for people. I think in a developed society, everybody should be able to eat three healthy meals a day, and we're going to do everything we can to deliver on the promise that I imagine had something to do with Alex coming to this country in the first place.
Finally, what do you say to Joanne's pitch for utilizing the, quote, balcony solar, which are essentially these, like, DIY hangable solar panels that you would prop on your balcony so that residents can be less reliant on the grid?
Yeah, my neighbor across the street got solar a few years ago, and their energy bill, I think they said it has not been above $100. It was above $100 once when there was that snow and ice storm a few months ago, and the solar panels were covered by ice. I think it was $125 that month when other people were seeing $600, $700, $800 for a quality middle-class home. And many months it's $30, $40. I believe in solar. The federal subsidies that my neighbor used, Trump has eliminated. We are looking hard, and Joanne, stay tuned. I almost want to, if there's a way, Joanne, reach out to me at matthew.meyer@delaware.gov. When we make an announcement in the coming weeks about the best solar program in the country, I want to make sure you know about it.
Okay.
So we're going to move to education, Governor, and to help us transition to that conversation, I want to read a comment from Holland in Georgetown. Holland wants to know what you're doing to improve what he calls the, quote, substandard schools in Delaware. And specifically, he wants your thoughts on charter schools and their role in Delaware's education system.
So first of all, I brought in an outsider education secretary. She was the deputy secretary of education for the United States, Cindy Martin. She's been an elementary school teacher, a principal, a superintendent in San Diego, one of the largest districts in the country, and then deputy secretary of education for the country. She's taking a new approach and a new view, really focused on what she calls tier one instruction, really having a laser focused on what is the instruction our kids are getting every day in the classroom? What are the wraparound and support services that kids who need them have? And what's the funding mechanisms we use to make sure the right dollars are going to the right places? We're spending billions of dollars in our state with a B on education every year. And I agree, we are not getting the outcomes that kids deserve. I generally believe in competition among public education systems. I like when, as a parent of two kids in Brandywine School District schools, I like that we have some choice about where kids go, and going forward, we will have choice. I think part of those choices are charter schools. I do not like it when certain charter schools draw boundaries and design their feeding patterns to exclude kids. That's unacceptable. We need to be inclusive, which is one reason why in the northern part of the state, there was a commission that was looking at various districting options. And I'm strongly supportive of a single consolidated district, because it would give parents across much of Newcastle County, our largest county, a lot of choices.
So you mentioned education funding, and we've talked about that before, that new hybrid education funding formula did get greenlit by the state Senate recently, moving to the House now. But the question out there remains how much money the state will actually put into this new system to help low-income students and English language learners. State Senator Laura Sturgeon, a Democrat who chaired the Public Education Funding Commission, had this to say.
We will also spend this year speaking with the governor's office and hopefully convincing the governor to build into his recommended budget the monies needed to start implementing the formula.
So where does your administration stand in the process of settling what the state can and should spend under this new funding formula?
Yeah, it's a vitally important question. How are you going to get the money to the kids who need it most? It is a top priority. I'm not going to sit here and announce to you what we're going to put in our budget in January of 2027. 7 months from now. I'm still trying to get past the budget I announced in January 2026. But let me say this, my first, second, and third priority in that budget next year will be getting our school funding right. It has been wrong for pretty much my entire life, going back decades and decades. If you just follow the dollars, number one, it's super hard to follow. It's very complex. There are 19 districts trying to figure out what's paid for by the state, what's paid for by the local property taxes, and why some districts and different schools get the money they get and additional funds that go to some schools and not others. It's not fair and it's not transparent. We're going to have a funding form that's more fair and transparent. And also, I'll add, more accountable than ever before. It's not fair if we're spending $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 per student and not getting the outcomes that parents deserve.
Referendum reform is now before the General Assembly, so the proposal would allow school districts to raise the local tax rates by up to 2% every year without going to voters first, but only if the district reserve funds stay below a certain limit. Do you think that this strikes that right balance between giving schools more predictable funding while protecting taxpayers?
Yeah, our current reassessment law gives school districts the right without referendum to just raise revenue 10% anytime there's a referendum. When you do, or anytime there's anytime if you're doing a reassessment every 40 or 50 years, that 10% maybe is not such a big deal. But there's a state law now that reassessment is going to happen every 5 years. So that means a 10% increase without referendum every 5 years, that's a big deal. And sort of why are we doing it like that? I think it makes sense to allow some minimal, you know, whether it's 2%, whether it's limited by the inflation rate. Right now, we look at school districts and they have to pay their teachers. They have to pay their staff. They have to pay their school secretaries and principals competitive salaries. If they don't, their teachers and staff are going to go to other districts or other states. And how do we expect them to do that when certain districts are having a lot of challenges getting a referendum passed? So I have no problem if there's some small increase permitted every year, so long as we take out that automatic 10% in the reassessment.
And do you believe that proposed 10% reserve cap is appropriate, or should it be stricter?
I haven't looked at the specific number. I think it's appropriate to have some reserve cap.
Okay, I want to bring in a comment. We have a comment from Game Over on YouTube. Game Over asks, with state workers only getting a 2% raise and our health insurance increasing, what are your plans to address retaining talent when salaries are much lower than neighboring states?
So 2% is only part of the increase. There are many job groups that get periodic increase. So every 3 or 5 years, they'll get a jump in pay. Obviously, if you get promoted, you get a jump in pay in mm-hmm. addition to that cost of living increase. Our state government offers a fixed benefit pension, right? You go outside of state government in the private sector. There aren't many places now you can get a fixed benefit pension. The quality of healthcare insurance you get is truly very high. I generally agree with the tenor of the question. Do we need to make it better, more attractive? Absolutely. Do we occasionally lose really good employees because of the salary, have difficulty attracting people really because of salary and benefits? Absolutely. We're constantly looking at that. And if there's more we can do, we will do it.
Okay. So before we wrap up, we have to ask about a major event coming up. You may have heard of it, the FIFA World Cup. It's coming to Philadelphia in a matter of weeks, and tourism is expected to spill over into Delaware. So, Governor,
spill over? I think the FIFA World Cup is centered in Delaware.
Well, Governor,
no, I'm serious. Cote d'Ivoire, which are the African continental champions, they are staying in Delaware. This is the single, it's not just a sporting event. This is the single largest collective human experience in the world. And it's happening right here in Delaware, in the region, mm-hmm. in our country, and in three countries. It's really exciting. We have a number of FIFA watch parties coming up. I just launched the sort of FIFA Philadelphia Delaware partnership down at DE Turf in Frederica, mm-hmm. Delaware last week. It's exciting. It's an exciting opportunity for the state. They say, I forget, the 80, 90% of the people who come to America for the World Cup will not go to a game. They come to be part of the experience. So we're looking at how do we take advantage of that. For me, it's hotel revenues and restaurant revenues. That's all nice. But how do we build longstanding relationships with people from these countries who are coming to experience the World Cup? Maybe they'll come back to Delaware again. Maybe they'll do business with us.
You have a team?
I'm American. So USA First, they announced their roster the other day. I'm excited about it. In my heart, I'm a Philly Union guy. Let's be honest. I'm certainly now a Cote d'Ivoire fan. They've adopted Delaware, so Delaware's adopted them.
Okay, well, Governor, thank you so much. We are going to have to leave it there. It has been a lively discussion. Thank you to all of the audience members who participated. Governor Matt Meyer of Delaware, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Shirley. Thanks, Tom.
And Ask Governor Meyer is produced by Hazel May Bryan with help from Paige Murray Bessler. Tina Calique and Al Banks are our technical engineers. Thank you to WHYY's Sarah Mueller and Chris Barish, and to Delaware Public Media's Benta Boutier, Israel Hale, and Thomas Terry. Kevin McCory is our executive producer. Joan Isabella is our audio general manager.
And I'm Tom Burr from Delaware Public Media.
And I'm Shirley Min. Thank you so much for joining us.